opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
We are 6 days into the Israel-Iran war. The Ayatollah says that they will not surrender. We're joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. Colonel, welcome to the show.
You're always a pleasure.
Colonel, a lot of saber-rattling going on, a lot of rhetoric going back and forth. They continue to lob ballistic missiles at one another. Obviously, Israel has air superiority over Iran. Your thoughts about where we find ourselves on day six?
Well, I think we find ourselves with two important things going on. One, is Israel really changing its objectives? Because we have to remember, military force is a means to an end and not an end. So what are you trying to shape here? Initially, it seemed clear that Israel was intent on destroying Iran's nuclear capabilities because it began its attacks against those facilities, as well as some of the military leaders. That was, has appeared to have been quite successful so far, and now they've moved on to striking more infrastructure, energy, Ministry of the Interior, other government leaders, media, et cetera, which brings us to the question of, are they now moving towards an objective of changing the regime, which is a much more difficult proposition. But along the way, they would have to calculate that in destroying their Iran's nuclear capability, they must destroy the facility at Fordo, which is an underground facility in the mountainside about 250 feet underground, which is principal site for about 3,000 centrifuges that have been one of the primary sources of enriching uranium to a 60% level, far beyond what you need for civil purposes, but moving close to a 90% level, which you need for a nuclear warhead. And not destroying that facility, I think, for the Iranians or for the Israelis would mean the mission was a strategic failure. They don't have the military capability to do that. So Mr. Netanyahu has been urging for some time for the United States and President Trump to get directly involved using our B-2 bombers and a massive earth penetrator bunker buster bomb of 30,000 pounds, which would have a higher probability of destroying that Fordo facility. But I want to quickly hasten to add that to do so probably would require what I would call a military campaign, not a military strike. It wouldn't be one and done. This would be multiple attacks by B-2s, probably at least two or three, to ensure a high probability of success. The president seems to be more and more moving in that direction as he left the G7 summit early, met most of the day with his advisors yesterday, and we see a large-scale repositioning of U.S. military forces in the region.
I'm glad you started with objective, because the realities are the Fordo complex is something that Israel knows well about and knew that that was going to be a challenge before they took step one, right?
No, that's exactly right. And it was a focal point as far back as 2010 when it was discovered, a secret site that the Iranians had created. It was announced publicly by then President Barack Obama. It was a focal point, oh, by the way, for the JCPOA nuclear agreement that the Obama people negotiated with Iran. And the Iranians actually agreed to convert that facility to solely medical research and to allow extensive International Atomic Energy Association or agency inspections of the site in the aftermath. But, of course, all that was washed away when Mr. Trump tore up this deal between the United States and Iran.
So there's also been mention of ballistic missile production capacity and capability by the Iranians. They seem to have put together a production facility that's able to produce these ballistic missiles at a pretty fast clip. How significant of a concern should that be?
Oh, it's a major concern, but one needs to emphasize one reason why historically Iran has leaned on production of ballistic missiles. It has almost no air force at all. It's still flying F-14s, and we're flying F-35s. So you know, any Iranian aircraft that gets aloft, and I've only heard of one getting aloft, would probably last about 5 minutes against the IDF or certainly against the U.S. Air Force. So their dependency for offensive capabilities has always been ballistic missiles. Now, in one of the previous strikes by the Israelis back in April of last year or October, the Israelis hit the Iranian ballistic missile production facilities and where they also produce propellant and slowing that ability to produce weapons. It's believed Iran has around 3,000 ballistic missiles at the start of this exchange. That being said, the Israelis now are saying that they may have destroyed up to half of the launchers that Iran has for launching ballistic missiles. And we've seen a steady decrease in the number of missiles that Iran has launched against Israel every night since this war began, beginning at about 100 on the first night. And I think last night I saw only about 30 Iranian missiles were launched against Iran. So, or launched against Israel. So either A, the Israelis are correct and they are limiting, if not reducing, Iran's ability to launch missiles, and or B, the Iranians are having more difficulty launching them because of their command and control challenges, as Israel has killed off a lot of the senior leadership controlling those operations. Or C, Iran is husbanding its missiles in preparation for a subsequent military engagement between Iran and the United States.
You mentioned regime change. We talked about the objective, you know, kind of the same problems that I've had in the approach with Hamas. How do you sit down and negotiate with this, you know, theocratic, crazy person in many respects? I mean, they've not lived up to anything that they've said that they would live up to. We've tried this before. What's different? I mean, and it seems as though Bibi Netanyahu really doesn't have any interest in sitting down and negotiating with the Ayatollah.
No, he has no interest whatsoever. And he sees this as an existential threat to Israel. And of course, Netanyahu had talked at the onset that it was imminent that Iran would acquire a nuclear weapon. I might quickly add, that was a conclusion that was largely pushed back upon by the U.S. intelligence services. Tulsi Gabbard, our DNI, testified for Congress in late March that it was the consensus of the U.S. intelligence services that Iran was a year or more away from acquiring a deliverable nuclear warhead. They could move quickly, perhaps, to create weapons-grade uranium, but then you got to create a warhead that can survive, test the warhead, make sure you got a missile with proper range that you can mate to the warhead. So there's several other things that, in fact, have to occur. But if this war is going on, it's been interesting. Mr. Trump has pushed back on that and said he doesn't believe Gabbard and his seven intelligence services, and he has accepted Mr. Netanyahu's argument that the acquisition of a nuclear warhead by Iran was imminent. It's my feeling the reason he did that is because he well knows that for the United States to do a military airstrike against Iran, as described using B-2 bombers, would be an act of war. I mean, my goodness, if Iran hit a nuclear facility on U.S. territory, I think we'd probably call it an act of war. And consequently, under the Constitution, one could argue that he needs to go to the United States Senate for a vote. But he might well argue, as, oh, by the way, George W. Bush argued in 2003, that Iraq was just about ready to launch a nuclear weapon against the United States and use that rationale to avoid seeking any kind of Senate authorization.
But when we talk about a year or more, I mean, that seems like a very short period of time to me. You know, I mean, a lot of folks have been asking, why now? If someone said to me, well, they're going to have nuclear capability possibly in a year, I mean, that seems pretty exigent to me.
Yeah, it certainly is, but it certainly doesn't preclude, I would argue, at least following a process we established in our Constitution, that the process might lead you to the same conclusion. The Senate might agree, yes, time is of the essence. Go ahead and do that, Mr. President. Second of all, in any military operation, you have to answer that question, which I always found when I worked in the Pentagon and the White House, I didn't think was asked often enough. And then what? And then what?
Yeah.
So let's say you destroy it and you...
Which is where we are now, right?
Right. I mean, let's ask that question. And then what? So you destroy their capabilities. Does that mean that you've destroyed it totally? Well, as long as they have nuclear scientists to understand how this works, they could eventually get back to that. Or they could seek some alternatives. Might they buy a nuclear weapon from North Korea, for example? That's possible. Or some other site. And furthermore, if you take the regime down, you know, while there is large opposition to the Ayatollah and his regime throughout the Iranian population, I've never divined that there's an organized opposition. It's just a general opposition. And our history has taught us that when you strike a country massively, people then tend to rally around the government, even if the government was unpopular. That's just normally how people respond. So you could end up with an even more autocratic regime coming to the fore in Iran. You won't see Thomas Jefferson show up to create a democracy, I guarantee you that much. Or you could see that just fragment into a failed state of 92 million people, which would hardly leave the region in a more stable fashion.
What are the odds of it being a non-theocratic form of government?
Again, this is all speculative in that, and then what? I think it's very possible. The theocratic nature gives a veneer of, you know, legitimacy to the government. But we have to understand the IRGC, the Quds Force, all these guys, they benefit enormously financially from, you know, controlling the country. And my experience in the Middle East is that religion, Islam in particular, will have some effect on government wherever you go. I mean, we think that, you know, separation of church and state is something that should be enshrined in democracy, and I happen to believe that, of course. I'm sure you do as well. But we have to understand that's a pretty American way of looking at things, or at least a Western way of looking at things. In the Middle East, without exception, you know, Islam is going to have an influence. I mean, clearly, religious influence is enormous in Israel, well, by the way, in terms mm-hmm. of defining Israeli policy. So whatever government might arise from the ashes, if in fact the government of Iran went down, I would tell you it would be one that could likely be authoritarian, and there would be a significant streak of religiosity as part of that particular governing body.
You know, on the one hand, I don't believe that Netanyahu wants to negotiate. On the other hand, you know, when we talk about hitting energy locations, the ministry, television stations and things of that nature, communication systems, it seems as though the level of aggression is increasing, and, you know, to get to some point, I don't know what that is. And then the flip side for me, I really want to hear from you on this issue. The Israelis seem to have pulled off something here pretty substantial, unique. I'm hearing a lot of folks talk about this intelligence information, U.S. intelligence versus Israeli intelligence of what's going on in Iran. Where do you break on that, or where do you fall?
Well, again, I haven't got access to classified information, so it's difficult for me to say.
But I mean, just being said, you know, in light of what they pulled off.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly, in terms of tactical intelligence, it's been, you know, pretty phenomenal. And they took a page out of their playbook on how they struck Hezbollah. Remember the Hezbollah attack mm-hmm. in which they had the pagers and they all explode and took care of a large portion of the Hezbollah command and control? And Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, said, oh, the Israelis would never kill me individually as a leader. Well, guess what? He's in his grave. So I think that certain assumptions that were made by Hezbollah were also made by Iran. Oh, the Israelis will never attack while we're still negotiating with the United States. So all these particular military officers, Quds Force leaders and the like, we can all go home for the evening. And they all got killed, along with nuclear scientists and others. And the Grand Ayatollah should know, as I think I said, that his personal existence, as well as the existence of his regime, are in jeopardy. So their tactical intelligence has been pretty doggone good. As far as strategic intelligence and the argument about how close were the Iranians or were the Iranians really moving towards creating a nuclear weapon, well, that's where the big disagreement exists. And since at least 2010 or so, the Israelis, Netanyahu, have continually said, well, the Iranians are just about to have a nuclear weapon. Well, by my calculation, that's 15 years, and if they were going to have one, they'd have had one by now. And they don't. But now he claims we have new intelligence that this time they really are close to getting a weapon. And that, again, goes against all of Mr. Trump's intelligence services, and we got eight that monitor this pretty closely. And to me, almost metaphorically, reminds me of when Mr. Trump went to Helsinki and met with Vladimir Putin and walked out into the ballroom for a press conference and said, well, you know, Mr. Putin says that he didn't interfere in our elections, and I don't see any reason why I shouldn't believe him. Well, every intelligence person in the room and watching on TV fell out of their chair because all eight U.S. intelligence services had come to an analytical conclusion that the Russians did, in fact, interfere with U.S. elections. So for the president to reject the analysis of all his agencies and accept the analysis of Mr. Netanyahu, who, as I think you suggested, hasn't, you know, personally and national interest in going ahead with this, it is a little concerning.
Yeah. I don't know how else to ask this. I mean, I'm not a betting man, but the odds that we give them or we do the bunker busting, they don't have the capability to fly that,
right,
that bomb. So it would be all on us. It seems to me that there's a bright line path that's being created to get to that point.
Oh, absolutely. And you can see it by the president's rhetoric. He's put out tweets, unconditional surrender. He's put out tweets, we control the airspace over Tehran. I guess we means us and the Israelis. He put out tweets about we know where the Ayatollah is. We could kill him if we want to. Seems to suggest to me, at least, that his logic is moving more in the direction of ordering this particular strike. We also see it in the positioning of military forces. Obviously, they pulled all the civilians and the families out of the region. We know we've shrunk the number of bases we have in places like Syria. We know we've put in more assets into the region. We have one carrier battle group, the Carl Vinson, offshore in the Arabian Sea. We have a second carrier battle group, the Nimitz, moving in from the Pacific and should be there shortly. And then there's reports this morning of the USS Gerald Ford, which was en route to Europe, will now move into the eastern Mediterranean, also be on station pretty soon. Finally, there have been reports of an increase in the flow of tanker aircraft, maybe 20 or more, flying into Europe and the Middle East, and those tankers would be essential if you're going to do an operation with the B-2s for aerial refueling when they were going in to an attack or coming out of an attack. So all those pieces seem to be moving in the direction of the military option. Now, it'll take some time, a few days, for the Nimitz and the Ford to get in position, and perhaps that gives you some space and leverage to convince the Iranian leadership that they're better disposed to negotiate and hand over their nuclear research material than actually going to a further and wider conflict.
Colonel, if you would indulge me for a moment, going back to objectives. Oftentimes I try to put myself in the shoes of the leader, and when I think of the proxy groups being financed by Iran for who knows how long and who knows how long it would go on in the future, would there not be an interest? I mean, if I was Bibi Netanyahu, I mean, I know that I would have an interest in to totally destroy the economic viability of Iran and create a situation of 10 to 15 years for them to regroup, get themselves back together again, where I know that they're not financing Hezbollah, Hamas, Fatah, and others, you know, to try and defeat Israel and the Jews in Israel, because that's all they cry each and every day.
No, that's exactly right. And for the last couple of decades, the Iranian deterrent to an attack by Israel was just that. Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, literally, and I've been on the border of Israel and Lebanon, in the villages and towns there in Mach, which look like houses, but I'm told by the Israeli intelligence they're not, they're sites for missiles. there were literally tens of thousands of missiles and rockets all pointed at Israel. And so the threat was, if you attack Iran, they will respond using our proxies. Same was for Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And we know over the past 18 months or so, the Israelis have largely destroyed Hamas and largely rendered Hezbollah toothless. So that kind of deterrent goes away. Furthermore, the Iranians were using Syria as a transit point for men, material, money, weapons, et cetera, going to Hezbollah, going to the West Bank, et cetera, to various Islamic groups. And that all collapsed with the end of the Assad regime. So all your allies are gone, and that particular deterrent is gone. The only deterrent you have left are the Houthis down in Yemen, who have fired a couple of missiles in the direction of Israel since this conflict between Israel and Iran began on the 13th. So rendering Iran, incapable of striking Israel, obviously is an objective of the Israelis, and rendering them impossible to deliver a nuclear weapon is also an objective. And I think that's part of the motivation for Netanyahu as well, not only the imminent acquisition of a nuclear weapon by Iran, but that Iran was weakened, not only externally through its proxies, but internally. Previous strikes had reduced their air defense, reduced their missile launchers. So now is the moment. If we're going to take them out, now is the time to do that. Not only that, might they move ahead with nuclear weapons, they might once be reconstitute their conventional missile launching capacity, reconstitute their air defense networks, and make an attack in future much more difficult. And it's clear from reports that Netanyahu, when he came to Washington in February, ostensibly to talk about tariffs, was really there to try to convince Donald Trump to participate in that particular attack back in February. He wanted the B-2s to go in February. But Mr. Trump decided to try to pursue a diplomatic option. And then when the Israelis decided to attack, Netanyahu kind of pulled the rug out from under Trump and his ability to negotiate any kind of settlement.
So I guess where we are right now is that proverbial wait and see, right?
Yeah, we're at the wait and see. What's interesting, I think, is a couple of things, though. One is, what are American options? Well, American options are obviously to participate with Israel in a military attack that would seek to destroy the nuclear capacity of Iran, if not bring down the regime, or stand back and say, while we support and defend Israel from attacks, it's going to be the Israelis who are going to have to execute that particular mission. Or number three, try to seek some method through the UN or elsewhere to get a diplomatic process back online. Those seem to be the options, and it's most of the time the case, you got three bad options. Yes. But then I think the other thing is this real question of, does Mr. Trump pursue the United States Senate? Because I think it's important for us to think about not only the policies we execute, but the process whereby we create policy. One might be a very, very strong supporter of this military option by the United States. It is an option. That doesn't mean it's an advisable option. It's doable. It doesn't mean it's advisable. And many, I think, would argue that even if you're a supporter of it, you would still rather see that the process was respected in terms of our Constitution and the law.
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. Colonel Jeff McCausland, as always, we totally enjoy this conversation with you and you being able to backfill all of this incredible information for us. We appreciate that as well. Have a great week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Noel.
Thank you, sir. That's Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. We will be right back, folks, with us.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you welcome to the club.
Folks, LSU's quest for championship continues today on WWL. The Tigers in the College World Series, one win away from the championship finals. Tonight, LSU takes on Arkansas. Pregame at 5:30, first pitch at 6 o'clock. You can hear every hit, every catch, every home run right here at WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app, brought in part by our great sponsors, Lamarck Lincoln, E3 Industrial Staffing, Helm Paint and Decorating, St. Martin and Bork, and Rejuvenme on WWL and the live free Odyssey app. Go Tigers at 6 o'clock. Joining us right now is Press Kavakoff, real estate developer, who's also part of the city coalition, and they have just issued a report on basic city services, and he joins us. Press, welcome to the show.
Hi, Noah. Is that Arkansas pitcher that got the no-hitter pitch in the ninth?
I'm not sure. I was curious about the same thing. I hope not.
I hope not. Anyway, yes, Noah, we pulled together. I think the last time you and I talked, a couple of years ago, we were pushing getting the police in New Orleans some money and some cars, getting technology for the to tie the carceral agents together, to civilianize the force, do proactive policing. I think it worked.
A lot of it did come together. We had this conversation earlier. I think a lot of processes have fallen in place, and I've been really excited about the solution rate of crimes. I know the crime's going down, but I think, you know, I like process, and it seems as though things have turned around.
Well, one thing we had on our city service coalition, which I'll describe in a second, a recommendation was to pay attention to the length of stay in OJC, the parish prison, which is way higher than the national average, and they got so many folks in there, 1,400. And I know in Jefferson Parish, I've heard that they had a rule that if you reached a certain level, then you'd find a way to release the less violent people. Is that true?
Oh, that's gone on since the 80s.
That's a smart procedure. I don't know how to get that for New Orleans. That's one of our recommendations. I was looking for a solution. That might be one. Anyway, I'll call you that.
We adopted
day.
We adopted an objective measure of propensity for violence, and it's called Code 6. And we've made this presentation to the district attorney's office, to the city, probably five times over the last 20-something years about adopting something similar and having to deal with jail overcrowding, because the more successful the NOPD becomes, the more pressure and stress it puts on the jail. And obviously, you want to selectively incapacitate the impact criminal. more so than all others, because they're the ones that are wreaking havoc on the streets of the community, and they're the ones that are totally destroying the quality of life and the success of a community. So those are the ones you obviously want to keep locked up first, right? And better utilize and get a better return on the investment of a jail bed. And that's always been the objective in Jefferson. We've been in jail overcrowding conditions, press, since 1971 or 1970.
Well, I'll come see you. You've got a wealth of experience. let me just say, Ron Fauché did a survey a couple of years ago, saying that 80% of the citizens in New Orleans were dissatisfied with the delivery of basic services. That's sanitation, permitting, streets, sewage and water, crime and safety. And you know that in the 60s we were 620,000 people, and now we're 357,000. And at this rate, we're heading for trouble. And so a group of us pulled together, diverse cross-section of the city, say, what do we do? How do we fix that? It's not just the problem of a particular administration. It's been with us for a long time. How do we organize things? Whoever, obviously, electing a great mayor and a great council will solve a lot of problems, but we want to make sure that they've got a system that's most effective. And we hired a couple of mayors, very successful mayors, one from Washington to bail that city out when it went bankrupt, or almost went bankrupt, and the mayor of Pittsburgh, who moved that town from a coal town to a robotics town, and was elected three times in a row to advise us, and got some other advisors, and came out with a 217-page report, which nobody will read. There is a summary, and our top line recommendations, at least at the top line of the city, is the city is not a business. Government is not a business, but it has businesses in it. Each one of the basic services are a bunch of workers and leadership, and those are businesses, and they need to be effectively run. We need, so we're recommending very highly that we get a chief administrative officer, go get the best one you can, pay what you need. We pay half of what we pay our chief of police to that person now. Give them the authority to run the businesses. The other issues that came up were a lack of transparency and a lack of coordination. And so we're recommending a couple of coordinating councils. One we call the Capital Cabinet, Michael Hecht and Joe Threat and Gilbert at the Super Bowl, pull all the departments together and figured out how do we get ready for that. And the departments thanked them. They've been working in silos. And so we're formalizing that process that we have on the structural side of the city. We have a Capital Cabinet, and on the crime or justice and safety, we call it, we're recommending a coordinating council. You know this world well, where ATF, FBI, the carceral agents, as well as the many nonprofits coming together and represented by a group, are at the table on a regular basis. For instance, reducing the length of stay at jail requires intense coordination and cooperation from the district attorney, the judges, the public defender, and the jailer, so that parish jails are just holding stations. You're either going to go to the state penitentiary or you're going to get released. And so if you're in there too long, you build it up and you get too many people. So we want coordinating councils to meet on those issues, so the different agencies are talking to each other. It's also very important to have the council and the mayor aligned, and so we're going to recommend that you identify in each of the five service areas what are the most important. You can't do 20 things, but what were the five things that each service area would do to make sure that you're moving in the right direction, and then have a technology department that can measure all those things and give you the data and put that information on a website so the public can be engaged. So the whole community, the public, the mayor, and the council, saying this is where we're going. These are the things we're going to try to accomplish and measure our success. So those are sort of the top line improvements. We're also recommending that the city attorney shouldn't represent the mayor or the council. They each have their own attorneys. They ought to represent the city. There's all sorts of back and forth fights there. So those are some top line. If you want me to continue, we have a few more. So tell me.
Well, first off, I want to tell you that I read the report. And I thought,
oh, well, good. You're one of them. Thank you.
Because I think y'all make some interesting observations about processes, about, you know, WIPs, works in process, and how things flow and why they flow. And, you know, typically when you have a lot of independently elected officials that you're asking to come together, there's a whole lot of friction points. And you got to be able to talk through those friction points in order to have things really work. The structure of New Orleans city government is challenging at best, and there's a lot of inherent conflicts that exist, and I think y'all did a great job of pointing out these friction points that we got to get beyond, separate and apart from the individuals that are in these offices. I mean, if you have, and we know what it looks like to have someone who's in a position of being non-compliant. I mean, we are running government right now through the judicial system. I mean, we're in court all the time, and
we're running the United States of America that way too.
Sure, but we're getting bogged down, and you know, we're not doing what we actually need to do. You know, and as you said, it's pretty fundamental about these five basic city services. I love the way that y'all broke that down. You know, and we're
negotiating. Let me give you an example of the alignment and the dysfunction in processes. The sewage and water board really has a five-headed monster. You can decide where it's going if you're a legislator from Bunkie. You have a board that's controlled completely by the mayor. You have fees your revenues are politically set up. They're not set up in a way what is really needed and what are the formulas. You have a civil service system that plays the in other words, you can't run it. You've got a civil service, which is very important to protect people from bad politics, but it shouldn't be the human resource function. And so you really, we're recommending a new water authority, and with appointments, you're going to need the state's cooperation. You need the federal's cooperation, because the best system in the world is still going to be billions of dollars short financially because of the antiquated system. But so we're recommending a board appointed by the governor would have some roles in appointing some people, the city and the city council and independent people. But we're going to try to we're recommending anyway to eliminate that. And the other thing that's happening with the salt water intrusion, you've got each parish scrambling to do their own intake system so they don't get salt water in their water and in their water system. And regionalization has always been important. It's been it's not been effectual. Like in transportation, they fight it, but it's reality. And so we're suggesting that you have a water facility with five parishes participating with on land in St. Charles Parish. So instead of spending two or three times what you need to solve that problem, you do it collectively because it's a collective problem. So we have a whole number of recommendations. I could go on and on, but go ahead.
Yeah, let me make this commitment to you. What I would like to do is set up at least an hour-long roundtable discussion. And I'd like to get into that 216-page report and talk about a lot of these issues, because I think folks would like to be educated on a lot of the deficiencies and the processes of what's going on. And I think your report does a great job of highlighting, as I said before, these friction points, and it would be difficult getting through it. But I think it's worthy of that. And so I'll have my producer contact
you. We welcome that opportunity, because our goal is to convince those that are running for office this time, mayor candidates, council candidates, that we're making sense. If you got a better idea, tell us, and implement it.
No doubt.
Because at the end of the day, you need government to implement these things. So I would love that opportunity.
Absolutely. Got to get to a break. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week. I'll have my folks contact you. We'll be right back, folks. That's Press Cavicoff, real estate developer, part of the City Services Coalition. We'll be right back.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Stay with us. What do we have coming up, Scoot, on hump day?
You know, I haven't heard that since you resurrected that, like, recently. I hadn't heard that since I was a kid. No, really, in my early years on the air, we just thought it was so cool to say, it's hump day. Yeah, we're talking about humping on the air. It was so cool back in the FM days. All right, so it seems like when kids are out of school here in New Orleans and around the country, there might not be enough food for some kids. We got to talk about that. Tyler Perry is the latest hit with a $260 million sexual harassment suit. What can guys do to avoid this from happening?
Scoot's headed your way, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Go Tigers!
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up.
Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.